Hello everybody, Peter Smith here again with Aged Awareness Show number 6. The following is a short extract from Dwayne Hepner's book Reba's Altars and the Golden Guides, Book 7, Section Dimensional World War 3, from his Amazing Romantic Adventures series. While on the etheric or fifth level, Dwayne and his companions were being advised by an unknown golden guide who had appeared to them. What is taking place are the different stages all souls must go through until they become aware enough to decide to take their own journey to real freedom. Of course, they must first go through all the other steps and stages before they are ready to take on the biggest and hardest journey of all. From time to time, there has to be a shifting from the comfortable positions to those of chaos and discord. And if this does not arouse the individual to seek out the real guides, then those souls must face the future as it unfolds. Life is far too big to just step into and then realize all that it is. So it always takes millions of lifetimes for one to procure themselves into making this monumental decision. And even then, most will only be able to possibly reach the top of the psych realms, as they will have been so overly conditioned with the God idea of worship and lawful obedience. Biblical prophecy plays a part in all of this, as it too is part of this deceitful plan. Tradition involves the creation of others, as most people follow what someone else has created. Yet tradition actually becomes old and dead after a certain time, even though it seems to still have a life of its own. Paul Twitchell was given the rod of power from Reba's Altars, and he decided his creation for mankind. As the responsibility was passed on, each successor was to provide their own uniqueness and expand upon the real position. Instead, the two before Dwayne in the physical went the way of their vain egos, as this has become a tradition with basically most of the religious and spiritual systems. It is true there are many people who have good intentions, but they do not have real experience and the real education it takes to make the real connection to the All Is. Most spiritual paths lie heavily on old tradition and the old gods and saviours, as Paul's original creation now does, and so does Durwood's creation when he and Gerald legally departed from each other. Dwayne has put together the real adventure without the followers and membership of traditional heritage. His real position is to equally work with others, those who have the real courage to be the being of light they already are. The real position is open to everyone who wants to stand with the new wave is, the rod of power, now. The real position for all of us is to be the real light, like the sun that shines. Thereby we automatically are one with all life, and we do not have to interfere with anything. We can now choose what our life is, as we are now everything and no longer chasing the little illusionary parts. Each person must decide their real journey. They must decide to let go of all the things that do not exist with the pure reality. This is why some only reach a certain level in life, as they still cling to things like gods and worship and their old relationships. Everything in life is always present, and each person decides their life and position, so there does not have to be a lot of concern about what the next person is choosing, as they have the right to go any direction they want to. The events that are forecast for the future of the Earth are from past causes and also from the alienoids who want to keep the masses in a locked-in fear. It does take a lot for any Uten to escape the clutches of the Kaluam God, but if one does not decide to do so, then pursue the best course to take, then they can only be left with themselves. There are two fundamental ways to view human history. One is known as the catastrophic or accidental view of history, which the dark brats like to promote as an answer for so much of the destruction they cause. The other idea is the conspiratorial view of what humans have come to know as their history. In the accidental catastrophic view, humans are led to believe that historical events such as wars and revolutions were the direct result of some sudden or surprising event, such as mismanagement, the weather, and the best one of all, God did it, which is known as an act of God with most insurance policies. While the catastrophic view can be more accurate for weather, volcanoes and earthquakes, that is, if they were not created by HAARP and nuclear devices, it does not always provide a realistic view of humanity and events influenced by man or the gods of man and the weather spirits. The invented idea of belief can be a powerful thing in the psych realms, as it is the same category as positive thinking, which can be a temporary benefit, like a band-aid, but can also become a curse because the masses do not understand or respect the reality of cause and effect of the dualistic forces. It is so that the gods of men do rule the ideals of prayer as a petition to them, because they want people to worship and grovel to them. This keeps the little unaware souls in bondage for many lifetimes of being slaves in many different embodiments. None of this is by chance, even though little minds like to think it is. Young malleable Americans and other minds are mostly taught the accidental view of human history in the governmental controlled school systems. This view is reinforced throughout their lives by the elitist controlled mass media. As a result, when most discover the conspiratorial view, the immediate reaction is shock, disbelief, and a refusal to accept something other than what they've been taught to believe. It is not hard to see how the dark brats have implemented the ideas of belief, hope, and faith into the minds and hearts of most people. Belief, hope, and faith do have their places, as do diapers on a child, but at some point, when the individual has developed their courage, they can then move far past the little ideas of traditional beliefs, which have been a conditioned superstition of control and obedience. But in the shadows lurks the hidden fear placed by the subliminal rats, like the unseen viruses in one's computer. This then becomes a huge baggage for a person to carry around, like a monkey on one's back they cannot see as they are moving forward with their life. There are huge amounts of deception taking place, and it is all being streamlined to direct as many people as possible into a complete unconsciousness for many more lifetimes. All things are governed by free will, and not the gods in the clouds above. The spiritualists are looking for an awakening with December 2012, just as so many were wondering about the situation with Y2K. It is not that something will not occur, but the saviour idea is a real long shot. Conspiratorial history studies the creative product of man's planning, with conspiratorial history as one researches the actual events, such as wars and revolutions, they soon discover these things are the result of planned events. While the conspiratorial view is not always accurate for weather, volcanoes and earthquakes, again, unless HAARP and other devices are involved, it is a realistic and accurate view of the interrelationship of man and the many nations on Earth. Since the planning for most of these events was done in secret, we use the term conspiratorial history. This is to say that some of human history is the result of plans constructed in secret, which is usually a conspiracy. This then becomes the new order of things according to those who want their way with what others are providing. Paul said that religion was a good business for the earth, as is quite evident, and so it is that whoever first starts printing the money, they then rule and can more than afford to pay others for whatever they want. To make sure others do not do the same thing, they create situations to keep people in debt and dumbed down with toxic water and food, plus their own created legal system to bind and imprison the disobedient. End of quotation. What is blazingly apparent now is that the Earth in its present form and with its present human and animal population is in terminal decline. What is perhaps not so apparent to the vast majority of its occupants is that this has been planned for eons by a self-appointed elite for their own twisted ends of world domination. a world people ultimately by drone slaves, whose sole function is to serve the elite and keep them in the lofty heights of comfort to which they think they are entitled. What they have failed to take on board, however, is that they are not immortal, and they are piling up some pretty horrendous karma for what they are and for a long time have been doing. This, plus the fact it is evidently the case that the whole galaxy, and probably the whole so-called known universe, is in the death throes of the end of an epoch. When this concludes, everything is destined to disappear, to ultimately start anew in due course, in an ever-repeated cycle that characterizes the very nature of everything that ever has been, is, and ever will be. It is not for no reason that Kevin was guided to open and close these later essays with music from Wagner's Götterdämmerung, Twilight of the Gods, the final part of his mighty ring cycle, which ends with a mythological cataclysm that aptly describes exactly the above. We have no idea exactly when the epoch will end, but once it has happened, all those who have not already made it to the real universes, it would seem, are destined to start again on a new physical world in a new physical universe, to go through countless more tedious or horrendous lifetimes before they are back to the same level they are at present. Back to go, and do not collect 200 quid. In the meantime, while the present physical universe still exists, life on this planet will be a seemingly endless hell, probably in a metal body that lasts considerably longer than our present flesh and blood ones, and gives considerably less chance for attaining awareness before it's too late. Therefore, we need to get our act together and get out of this rapidly deteriorating hellhole as soon as we can. So how do we do it? A steadily dwindling number of people, certainly in the West, still seem to believe salvation will be theirs if they blindly follow some form of organized religion. Sadly, they are suffering under a serious delusion if this is the case. I've dealt with what I think of the Christian religion in an earlier essay, and have no wish to repeat myself here, save to point out once again that all old religions nowadays are a travesty of their original selves, and even going back to their origins, we were never told anything like the full story, if their founders even knew it. Even in more recent times, Twain's predecessors, those that came after Paul Twitchell, proved to be unaware enough to be swayed away from the real truth by ego trips and other all-too-human failings. Paul himself laid firm foundations for Twain to eventually come on the scene, backed by the real universal guides, and pick up the pieces left by those that came in between. Twain put his own stamp on things by doing away with old-style membership and followers and any obviously worn-out religious trappings such as praying and deference to a god. This is not to say anything against Paul, who was to some extent having to hone his presentations to suit the times, times that have changed somewhat since and enabled Twain more freedom of expression. Twain, in his turn, has perfected the way to give his presentations, and this comes across very well in his pleasant and jocular manner when I have had the opportunity to talk to him on Kevin's Skypes. There is no pretentiousness about him, and he never talks down to you, let alone has any obvious aspirations to be some form of cult leader. In fact, that is the last thing he is. Thanks to Twain's wonderful books and other work, we are being given the chance to see the light and make our own way back home, back to the source of everything, or the all is, as Twain calls it, and total freedom. Freedom of any kind is not what the aforementioned elite have planned for us. This so-called elite has been given many names, the Illuminati, the Cabal, the Chosen Ones, and by me at any rate, several other mainly unprincipled names. They are basically from carefully preserved, chosen bloodlines to be found in the crowned heads of Europe, the presidential families of the USA, and many others from the highest levels of society and money. They themselves are ultimately answerable to dark beings, aliens that infested the Earth eons ago, and spend most of their time in another dimension, as, until the atmosphere on Earth is totally altered, they cannot normally survive here for very long. Hence, they are doing everything they can to alter the air we breathe to suit them, and get rid of all organic life here eventually. They want to decimate the human race first, reducing it to a more manageable number. What is their idea of a more manageable number? The figure of 500 million, or half a billion, that is some 1/14 of the present population of the Earth, or of at least the 7 billion we are told it is literally set in stone. In Elbert County, Georgia, in the USA, a strange collection of vertical stone slabs appeared in 1980, mysteriously, apparently ordered by someone calling himself R.C. Christian, who subsequently disappeared. The slabs are covered in sentences in a number of different languages, basically spelling out a kind of blueprint for a desired new world. Most chillingly and most controversially, one such sentence seems to be a death sentence for the larger part of the human race, as it calls for the population to be maintained at under 500 million. If we look back over recent years, it is striking how many so-called natural disasters have occurred all over the world and seem to be increasing at an alarming rate. Almost every week we hear now of some catastrophe somewhere in the world, whether it be earthquake, volcano, landslide, hurricane, you name it, with the inevitable loss of life or livable conditions, which can amount to the same thing. These, however, can seem small fry to other disasters clearly planned, such as laboratory manufactured epidemics. We have seen several attempts to get these going over the last few years: HIV, SARS, avian flu, etc., most of which have been a failure at getting out of control. However, going back, the so-called Spanish flu, they believe now it neither came from Spain nor was it in fact flu, of 1918 took out 50 million people, far more than World War I had done, and nobody knows where it came from or why it stopped. Similarly, the Black Death appeared suddenly in medieval times and equally suddenly disappeared in two waves in Europe, separated by two centuries. It has now been proven it was not bubonic plague, nor was it spread by the fleas on black rats, as was always said. It has been shown there were no black rats in the worst hit parts of England, for example. Quite simply, no one knows what it was or what caused it to come and go so suddenly, twice. At the time of writing, a new potential epidemic has raised its ugly head, namely coronavirus, which, starting in China, is slowly putting out its tentacles to the rest of the world. Whether it will prove to be another storm in a teacup, or in fact be the disease that puts in the final nail of our human coffin, remains to be seen. People in the know, however, are already linking it to the quiet, creeping terror of 5G, whose radiation is already making itself known in various parts of the world, including the UK. Those who are welcoming this ghastly aberration as a wonderful addition to their mobile phone attributes are rather like the man who found the electric chair a comfortable place to sit down. We know from a non-mainstream, of course, TV programme put out a few months ago by a man who played a big part in the development of 5G that it was originally intended as a lethal weapon to be targeted at unsuspected enemy troops. Poor devils. It seems that the unsuspecting victims now, apart from the public at large, are town councillors, who have been duped into thinking 5G is a wonderful new means of spying on the population, hence the up to recently deafening silence on the subject, not realising they are signing their own death warrants as well as ours. As intimated earlier, the ultimate objective of the cretins, one of the more principal names I have for them, really running the show, is to reduce rather than for now totally annihilate the human race. They are presumably relying on a certain amount of the population surviving this medical Armageddon, if it works this time in the way intended. Either way, they always have their other horsemen of the apocalypse, war, up their sleeve. The first victim of war being, as we have often heard, the truth. It is difficult to know just how successful past ones have actually been in the eyes, if they have any, of the Cretins, who have undoubtedly been totally involved in starting all wars since man first picked up a lump of wood to hit a rival with. Somebody once said he did not know exactly how World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be with sticks and rocks. We certainly have the nuclear, chemical and biological means to completely wipe ourselves out many times over, and it often seems the military cannot wait to try out each new lethal toy the scientists and armament magnates come up with, much to the delight of the Cretins. Again, if war is the final blow that achieves their aims, the required survivors will of course stay for the duration in their underground bunkers. Eventually they too will disappear when there are enough robots to replace them. It is hard to understand how even now people, most people on this planet in fact, do not seem able to see what is happening and indeed has been happening for eons. Surely they can't have not noticed how certain people always seem to come out of every catastrophe that much wealthier. Catastrophes, if the truth were known, they helped bring about. And that these people invariably run or own mega companies and banks that are gradually swallowing up all smaller rivals, and that such people, especially in the USA it has to be said, invariably attain the highest political clout, putting them in the position to disproportionately favour their own companies in awarding mega contracts and the like. Meanwhile, the poor get desperately poorer and the middle classes get phased out. There is no question in my mind, as a practising accountant, that each successive government, though inevitably stating that they wish to help small businesses, are doing their darndest to indeed help them into the grave. Over the last few years in the UK, we have seen a long succession of legislation enforced on them, all at their own, often not inconsiderable expense. How the Cretins love that concept. More and more of the previously fairly simple tasks have now to be done on complicated computer programs, with large fines if you get it wrong, and no apologies that HM Revenue and Customs are getting increasingly unhelpful, many due to fierce cuts in manpower and unaware themselves of how the so-called system in question is supposed to work. The whole idea, of course, is to end up with a new world order serviced by robots in a small number of gigantic worldwide organisations. There will no longer be any room for the self-employed. Nobody will be able to or presumably have the need to travel other than from their cell-like dwellings in their driverless cars, with no choice where they're going, only to their places of work. There is already a drive to get people out of the rural areas and to ultimately have them all cordoned off in major towns and cities where they, those that are still here, will be the easiest to control. Towards this end, certainly in this part of the UK, there is a notable number of high-rise buildings suddenly springing up, especially in nearby Milton Keynes. While I was working in Luton for a time 4 or 5 years ago, a new building suddenly started going up only a short distance from the offices I worked in. I was able therefore to observe its progression upwards and was amazed to see how they built it. Instead of a steel skeleton or obvious reinforced concrete structure, they seem to be simply stacking up shoebox-shaped units, something like ship containers, and presumably bolting them together. Somebody said the building, I counted 9 stories in all, was to house students. The thought that kept going through my mind as I watched it going up day after day was, they're not apartments, they're cells. Having always been interested in the older skyscrapers of New York City, a work colleague of mine who knew this, not difficult as my various offices have long been decorated with large posters of my favourite buildings, the Empire State, Chrysler, Woolworth, etc., lent me a fascinating book a few years ago. The book dealt with the financial aspect of the various building phases that have taken place in New York over the past decades, and how it ties in with the city's various financial problems, indeed occasional bankruptcy scenarios. It made the point in particular that at the time of writing, the book was brand new about 5 years or so ago, most of the huge new office buildings in downtown Manhattan were never more than 50% occupied, and yet they were continually bringing more and more office space onto the market. This certainly seems crazy, and every time I see a new picture of the city, there are always new, sometimes truly colossal buildings I hadn't seen before. It is also the case, apparently, that some of the older, often iconic skyscrapers, which were built as speculative office buildings, are now being converted to residential use. A good example is the beautiful 1932 950-foot tower at 70 Pine Street, the tallest building in downtown Manhattan until the World Trade Center was built. It was built as the city's service building, was eventually the American International Building, and since their demise, its 66 floors are now, I gather, residential after a major overhaul. How, we may ask, are they going to achieve this seeming mass emigration from the country to the cities? Needless to say, the writing is very much on the wall. Take a look at what has been happening around the world, most graphically recently Australia. Even the mainstream news can't disguise the fact that an ecological disaster on an unprecedented scale has and is taking place there. The tool used there has been fire, but other places around the world can be cited where similar massive scale destruction of the ecosystem is happening by floods and other so-called acts of God. Acts of the cretins, more like. Not only is the weather clearly being manipulated by the minions of the cretins in such places as the HAARP installations in Alaska, New Zealand and elsewhere, but in the USA, for example, countless private farmlands, the homesteads of families for generations, have been deliberately destroyed by damming rivers and other means, which both facilitates the removal of the rural communities and also the scope to unload onto us genetically modified muck known laughably as food. As I write this essay, we are yet again being subjected in the UK to storm after storm and mega flooding in parts of the country. It was interesting to hear a spokesman for the National Farmers Union being interviewed on TV saying it was all very well sparing the big towns by building flood defences, but all the floods are drowning the farmlands. At the same time as suitable accommodation is being made available for the future slaves, so also it is being made for dissidents, anyone who dares or even thinks about defying the masters of the New World Order. Quietly, in hidden away locations, large camps are already standing waiting and no doubt being added to. From aerial photographs, these resemble pictures I have seen of the Dachau and other Nazi concentration camps, only with rows and rows of end-to-end mobile home-type trailers crammed into far tighter lines than would ever be the case in holiday camps. Somehow I doubt they contain the luxury furnishings and appliances typical of the holiday camps I've stayed at either. The news coming now out of China, even since I began work on this essay a week or so ago, is that as a result of the coronavirus epidemic, whole cities are now being quarantined, so the inmates, for that is what they certainly are now, are unable to leave. How very convenient. China has long been held up as the model for the New World Order by those in the know. I remember a while back seeing on TV a clip of film showing Chinese soldiers marching. I know well-drilled soldiers can march remarkably together, almost like a well-oiled machine, but this was something else. They really did look like robots, identical in every way, and it's hard to put into words, but there was a chillingly mechanised way they marched. It is my intention, as last time, to complete this essay with a meaningful dream I had. But before that, I just wanted to say a few words about positive thought. In the Duane quotation earlier in this essay, the guide warns us against this. This may at first sight seem to go against my going on record in an earlier essay about how helped I'd been by the use of positive affirmations. There is, however, no divergence of opinion here. Discussing the matter with Kevin a while back clarified my thoughts on the matter. Basically, it is a case of be careful what you wish for. In other words, do not affirm for things that might only be achievable in a future life. because you are inevitably creating a mega tap line that will drag you back into such a life once again on this planet, the very thing we are trying to avoid. My only regular positive affirmations are now as follows. 1. The real universe loves and protects me and mine and our loved ones always. 2. I'm happy and healthy and fit and well and perfect in every way. 3. I always have enough money for what I want to do. 4. I love and forgive myself for everything I do and have ever done. It is always possible some elements, even in the above, could be construed as as tap line material, but in view of historic amazing results so far, I'm not unduly concerned by this, I think, remote possibility. So to end now with the promised dream, it is, I think, my favourite dream of all time, and was the subject of one of the UK Skypes a few months back. I think it is appropriate to share it again here as a good indication of what you can achieve on the real side, and perhaps to lighten the otherwise rather sombre discourse. Dream. A few nights ago I had the most amazing and exciting dream I can ever remember. It started off unremarkably enough. I appeared to be in some kind of big basement with numerous others milling about. I did not see their faces nor hear them speak. It was fairly dark, but I could see at least two sets of stone stairs of maybe 10 or more steps leading up to doorways to the outside. People, including me, were occasionally going up one or other set of stairs, looking out and coming back down again. When I looked out, it was a beautiful sunny day, and there appeared to be an area of grass leading out to some nearby hilly area. There was a general feeling of apprehension in the basement. Some enemy or malevolent group were anticipated and expected to appear over the nearest hill at any time. Then I was standing still in the basement, confronted by a large vertical trap door. It was not solid, but rather resembled a single old-fashioned bedstead, but with a mass of criss-crossing wires rather than springs. Two men in front of me pushed it upwards and exited, so I followed suit, out into the glorious sunshine, with no longer any thoughts of menace approaching. Arguably what happened next was a different dream, but there was no obvious break, and it seemed to just follow seamlessly on. It was, however, now dark, and I was up in the air, flying above some small town or village centre. I was quite high up, but I could see lots of human activity down below, so I assumed it was a winter's late afternoon or evening, though I had no impression of it being cold. For the next few minutes of the dream, at least, I found I could decide what to do and where to go, rather than just going with the flow of the dream. I think this probably makes this part of the events, at least, a lucid dream. Either way, I decided to dive down to just above the people's heads, and nobody seemed to see me. I then soared upwards and spent a certain amount of time shooting away in different directions, dive-bombing and hurtling upwards, hither and thither, like an out-of-control UFO, although I was perfectly in control and loving every minute of it. I had had the odd flying dreams over the years, but nothing like as exciting or as long as this one. Also, everything seemed so vivid and clearer than normal dreams, like comparing HD with normal TV. I found myself away from the town centre and flying up a residential street. The only person around was a little old lady walking along. In a moment of devilment, I dived down and dropped on the pavement, sidewalk, behind her. No reaction. I gently pushed her back. Still nothing. I felt no contact either, so I got the impression we were not in the same plane of existence, which would explain why nobody else seemed to be able to see me earlier. I zoomed back up into the sky and continued my roller coaster activity. Suddenly I found I was flying up a long dimly lit corridor in a long building, possibly a school. At the end of the corridor, in the doorway, I recognised Dwayne as he appears on the front of this book 7 in a blue suit. Behind him stood two or three figures. They were rather in the shadow, so I could not make out any features, although I felt they were all male. I dropped down to the floor in front of him. He smiled at me and made some encouraging remark, which I could not recall waking up later on. We bid each other goodbye and I flew off, back up the corridor and out up into the sky once more. Hovering for a moment and considering where to go next, I was suddenly aware of Kevin hovering next to me. He said something about there being something of interest to see at the railroad station, so we set off for it and I woke up. I peered at the clock. It was about 3 a.m. I was in a state of total euphoria and could not get over the exhilaration and excitement I had just experienced. I told myself, "You've just visited the real universe, old son." An impression that was later to be refuted by those more in the know. It was evidently just the astral level. That could, however, not take away that wonderful experience, and Dwayne told me it was the real guides effectively giving me a booster. He added that the first part of the dream signified rising above the physical and in effect moving into a higher level. That's the end of the dream and of this essay. I hope you enjoyed listening to it, and thanks for so doing. And just arise for me to do the New You song, and then wish you goodbye. New You.